This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
No contracts, no scripts. No contracts, no scripts. No contracts, no scripts. No
contracts. When the Writers Guild of America went on strike earlier this month, we saw the effect immediately on the late-night comedy institutions, which went dark right away.
This show will be interrupted, and we won't be here to spend time with you.
But as the strike goes on, the future of many scripted shows will also become uncertain. At issue is the revenue generated by streaming services. On the one end of the bargaining table, the big studios don't seem inclined at all to capitulate to the WGA's demands. The last time the Writers Guild hit the picket line, it was 2007, and that strike carried over into the following year and lasted 100 days. It reportedly cost the city of Los Angeles hundreds of millions of dollars, and this year's strike has the potential to last even longer.
Once the studios broke our business, we've been left with crumbs, and we have to say no to that. We have to stand up together, and we are united.
Staff writer Michael Shulman has been covering the strike for The New Yorker, and he recently spoke to Laura Jackman, a veteran TV writer and a strike captain, about the stakes.
Well, tell me about what the scene is like on the picket line. Where were you picketing?
I was mostly at Amazon / Culver Studios this week. So you're passing both studio people and you're passing just people on their way to lunch. And it's electric. The mood is electric. You know, we're walking in circles, but we're also getting cars honking at us as we pass. We're doing our chants. The solidarity has been incredible to see and to experience.
So getting a little more serious about what this strike is actually about, when we spoke a week or two ago, you said this is an existential fight for the future of the business of writing. And if we do not dig in now, there will be nothing to fight for in 3 years. What do you mean by that?
So we're on strike for a fair deal from the studios that is going to allow us to share in the success of the content we create and something that makes writing a sustainable career. It has been chipped away at, is one way of putting it. Eviscerated is another way of putting it. So this month marks my 10-year anniversary in the Guild. I'll have been a Guild member for 10 years in just a couple weeks. And I've seen the offers for staffing go from 20 weeks extendable to 15 weeks, 12 weeks, 10 weeks, 8, 7, 6. So the same amount of television is still being written. The same amount of television is still being produced. But they're asking us to write more of it in a shorter time period for significantly less money. And that, I think, is the thing that really represents the threat to our business overall.
And how does that translate in terms of how a writer makes a sustainable living? Like if you, it seems like it used to be when you were on, you know, a network show, you had a 22 episode season and you were basically employed for an extended period of time and then you get residuals. This doesn't seem like that at all.
No, our structure of compensation used to be that you were getting paid to do the writing in the writer's room. You were getting paid to cover prep, production and post-production. And then on the back end, you were getting something called residuals, which is the money that you make as long as the studio is still making money off of that content. So any rerun that you see on television, months or years after the fact, a writer is getting paid for that. Those are things that we struck for. And they have sort of said, okay, now that we're all streaming, now that we've broken the business of how your compensation works, we're going to ask you to accept a lesser residual or almost no residual. We're not going to pay to have writers cover prep, production, and post-production. And we're going to whittle down these rooms into something called mini rooms.
Right.
Mini so that rooms we're employing
I've been hearing a ton about.
Yes.
Can you explain what those are? What that means, mini room?
So there is no such thing as a mini season of television, right? When we watch a season of television, we're watching a beginning, middle, and end, whether that's 8 episodes, 10 episodes, or 22 episodes. And they're saying, we want the same amount of episodes. We want a full season, but we want you to do it way faster. And we want you to sort of come in, give us a blitz of content and scripts, and then we're going to cut off your pay.
Now, this is very different than the concept of the television writer's room that I think a lot of people thought existed. And I want to go back and talk about your earliest experiences working in TV. So you came out to Hollywood about 10 years ago, right? Can you tell me a bit about what brought you there and what your first job was like?
My first job was an ABC Studios, ABC Network show called Lucky Seven. And the process of getting staffed is, you know, you pay on your own dime to fly out to LA. You do a water bottle tour. So you go around, you take all these meetings with studios and networks and producers and showrunners. And then hopefully at the end of it, you have an offer to staff. So that's what it was like for me. I spent weeks doing these meetings. And then at the end of it, I had less than 5 days to pick up my whole life, fly out to
where?
Los Angeles. I was in Chicago at the time.
Working as a playwright, right?
Working as a struggling playwright, working as a working, I say that, that's in generous terms, right? Working, trying as a playwright. It was come out to Los Angeles, find a second apartment to sublet because I still had my place in Chicago, and then sit in a room with a bunch of lovely people and break a series of television together. And it was exactly what a writer's room experience is supposed to be. Unfortunately, we got canceled after our second airing. We got canceled after our second episode. It's the full Hollywood experience for me inside of 20 weeks. but it was the old model, which recognized that not only are we being compensated for our labor in the moment, but we're being trained for the future. We're being trained as up-and-coming showrunners on our own.
Right. So in the intervening 10 years, a lot has changed about the TV industry. And one of the things seems to be that it's a lot harder for writers to get experience to be on set. Can you explain sort of how that has changed?
So part of that is because of the mini room. If you're only employing writers for 6 weeks, first of all, those scripts are not done. Those scripts are not locked, and those scripts are not ready to shoot after 6 weeks. Many, many more things have to happen after that. And often it's on individual showrunners to be writing and revising those scripts on their own for weeks or months before prep starts in earnest. So the shorter the room, the farther apart it's separated from the process of production, the smaller the chance that those writers who wrote those episodes will get to engage in the full process of production.
Right. Now, you're not only a longstanding member of the Guild, but you've also been a contract captain and now a strike captain. So you've been talking to a lot of members. Can you tell me about sort of what you're hearing from people and what you were hearing from people before the strike was called? Like, what's the mood? What are people bringing up when you talk to them?
The word that I would use in the lead up is desperation. That people are really desperate. And it has become what once was a path to a middle-class career has really become a sort of moonshot, that people are falling through the cracks, that they're not able to ascend that ladder, that they're not able to make a career out of this. And after 3 years of COVID, going on 4 years of COVID, I think the American public, I think the world has seen the companies are reaping massive profits off of the value of labor. And our labor is standing up and saying, not on our backs. You got to compensate us. You got to pay us fairly.
Now, in terms of how long this is going to go on, the previous WGA strike in 2007 to 2008 was 100 days. The one before that in 1988 was over 150 days. But the conditions are different this time. And people like Ted Sarandos from Netflix have said, well, basically, you know, we have a big backlog of stuff. We can just roll that out. And so there's a feeling that the studios might have more leverage than they even had previously and can kind of wait this out. Do you think that's true? And what do you see happening? When do you see this kind of hitting the point of you know, we have no shows left to show?
So they say a lot of stuff, right? They say a lot of stuff. They tell us that they can't afford the cost of us. And simultaneously, they're on their public earnings calls, trumpeting bright financial futures to their shareholders. So they say a lot, and then we see that what they say might not be completely true. What I can tell you is we are shutting down productions daily. We are halting productions and plans for production daily. We are turning back Teamster trucks. Local 399, we owe a huge debt to, that they are driving up to the studio gates, they are seeing our picket lines, and they are waving and turning away. The brave IATSE members, right, who are not getting paid for that day that they were supposed to work, are seeing our picket lines and turning around. And the fact is that we are not alone this time. Every single Hollywood guild and union has come out in solidarity. The DGA, SAG-AFTRA, IATSE, the laborers, the plasterers, the Teamsters, they were all with us at the membership meeting at the Shrine Auditorium on Wednesday. And the Shrine has these old wooden floors, and people were stomping, people were clapping. It was ovation after ovation, because we recognize the sacrifice in the solidarity that everyone else is pledging to us. And that is what is different this time.
No contracts, no scripts. No contracts, no scripts.
Laura Jackman's credits include the TV adaptation of Get Shorty and Netflix's Grace and Frankie. Michael Shulman is a staff writer for The New Yorker, and this is The New Yorker Radio Hour.